Just before I closed my eyes, I had a fleeting glimpse of a large, alarmed face behind the wheel of the old car. Then something hit the left side of the Rover with a rending crash. When I opened my eyes, we were stationary. There was just Tristan and myself staring straight ahead at the road, empty and quiet, curving ahead of us into the peaceful green of the hills. I sat motionless, listening to my thumping heart. Then I looked over my shoulder and saw the lorry disappearing at great speed round a distant bend. In passing, I studied Tristan's face with interest. I had never seen a completely green face before. After quite a long time, feeling a draught from the left, I looked carefully round in that direction. There were no doors on that side. One was lying by the roadside a few yards back, and the other hung from a single broken hinge. As I watched, this one too clattered onto the tarmac with a note of flat finality. Slowly, as in a dream, I got out and surveyed the damage. The left side of the Rover was a desert of twisted metal, where the old car, diving for the verge at the last split second, had ploughed its way. Tristan had flopped down on the grass, his face blank. A nasty scratch on the paintwork might have sent him into a panic, but this wholesale destruction seemed to have numbed his senses. But this day didn't last long. He began to blink, then his eyes narrowed and he felt for his woodbines. His agile mind was back at work, and it wasn't difficult to read his thoughts. What was he going to do now? It seemed to me, after a short appraisal of the situation, that he had three possible courses of action. First, and most attractive, he could get out of Derby permanently, emigrate if necessary. Second, he could go straight to the railway station and board a train for Broughton, where he could live quietly with his mother till this had blown over. Third, and he didn't bear thinking about, he could go back to Scaledale House and tell Siegfried he had smashed up his new Rover. As I weighed up the possibilities, I spotted the old car which had hit us. It was lying upside down in a ditch about 50 yards down the road. Hurrying towards it, I could hear a loud cackling coming from the interior, and I remembered it was market day, and many of the farmers would be bringing in crates of hens and maybe 20 or 30 dozen eggs to sell. We peered in through a window, and Tristan gasped. A fat man, obviously unhurt, was lying in a great pool of smashed eggs. His face wore a wide, reassuring smile. In fact, his whole expression was ingratiating as far as it could be seen through the mask of eggs which covered his features. The rest of the interior was filled with frantic hens, which had escaped from their crates in the crash and were hunting for a way out. The fat man, smiling up happily from his bed of eggs, was shouting something, but it was difficult to hear him above the wild cackling. I managed to pick out the odd phrase. "Very sorry indeed. Entirely my fault. I'll make good the damage." The words floated up cheerfully while the hens scampered across the man's beaming face and yolks coursed sluggishly down his clothes. With an effort, Tristan managed to wrench open a door and was driven back immediately by a rush of hens. Some of them galloped off in various directions till they were lost to sight, while their less adventurous companions began to peck about philosophically by the roadside.
"Are you all right?" Tristan shouted. "Yes, yes, young man. I'm not hurt. Please don't worry about me."
The fat man struggled vainly to rise from the squelching mass.
"I am sorry about this, but I'll see you right, you can be sure."
He held up a dripping hand and we helped him out onto the road. Despite his saturated clothes and the pieces of shell sticking to his hair and moustache, he hadn't lost his poise. In fact, he radiated confidence. The same confidence, I thought, which made him think his old car could overtake that speeding lorry. He laid a hand on Tristan's shoulder.
"There's a simple explanation, you know. The sun got in my eyes."
It was 12 noon and the fat man had been driving due north, but there didn't seem much point in arguing. We lifted the shattered doors from the road, put them inside the Rover, drove to Sawton, treated the milk fever cow, and returned to Derby. Tristan gave me a single despairing look, then squared his shoulders and marched straight to his brother's room. I followed close on his heels. Siegfried was worse. His face was red with fever, and his eyes burned deeply in their sockets. He didn't move when Tristan walked over to the foot of the bed.
Well, how did you get on?
The whisper was barely audible. Oh, fine. The cow's on her feet when we left, but there's just one thing. I had a bit of a bump with a car.
Siegfried had been wheezing stertorously and staring at the ceiling, but the breathing stopped as if it had been switched off. There was an eerie silence. Then, from the completely motionless figure, two strangled words escaped.
What happened?
It wasn't my fault. Chap tried to overtake a lorry and didn't make it. Caught one side of the rover.
Again the silence, and again the whisper.
Much damage.
Front and rear wings pretty well mangled, I'm afraid, and both doors torn off the left side.
As if operated by a powerful spring, Siegfried came bolt upright in the bed. It was startlingly like a corpse coming to life, and the effect was heightened by the coils of thermogene which had burst loose and trailed in shroud-like garlands from the haggard head. The mouth opened wide in a completely soundless scream.
You bloody fool! You're sacked!
He crashed back onto the pillow as though the mechanism had gone into reverse and lay very still. We watched him for a few moments in some anxiety, but when we heard the breathing restart, we tiptoed from the room. On the landing, Tristan blew out his cheeks and drew a woodbine from its packet. A tricky little situation, Jim, but you know what I always say. He struck a match and pulled the smoke down blissfully. Things usually turn out better than you expect.